SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Wednesday, race fans. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964, if you're listening to Sirius XM online, and at our website as well, stevepick.com. Absolutely glorious fall day here, and hope it's as nice wherever you are today, and certainly for the horsemen and the staves that are here at Saratoga. The last few mornings, I think they've been cracking some ice on the water buckets. But not today. Really gorgeous, and would have kind of missed that part with getting out there at Saratoga this time a year. And there's still plenty of major horses that are housed at Saratoga. Of course, the main track is closed now, but it went till Friday after the end of the meet. But the Oklahoma, still a buzz of activity when you go by. And there's any number of outfits that have got prominent horses that are working at Saratoga. And that includes the Mott Camp and Fletcher and Brown and more. It has that really perfect feel today. A little bit of warmth back in the morning. And you know, for midweek, I got to tell you, the midweek racing is I'm not going to say that the midweek racing is better than Saturdays. I mean, so many of us have to, you know, for so long really have focused on the weekends. But one thing that, you know, that this period, that these 6 months have shown, is the value in, you know, digging into these cards. And today, tomorrow, Friday, you know, leading into the first of several, you know, really important weekends. You know, if you look at the stakes calendar, and I'm not just talking Breeders' Cup Challenge races. Those are, you know, those are a big part of things. But, you know, Santa Anita's card got set for Friday, which includes the Eddie D and the Chili. Sherwood Chillingworth, first running of the stake that honors Chili's memory. And they got a nice card for Friday. And they're far from alone. Pimlico starts tomorrow, leading into next week. And the two cards that are already set for the next couple of days, or Thursday, Friday, really good. I mean, the card tomorrow, you've got two-year-old fillies, a lot of firsters from some very nice outfits, including Trombetta and Brittany Russell, Kelly Rubley, Mike Matz. Nice, very nice group. Graham Motion, it's got Closer to the Heart coming back. Then there's a turf sprint, and then into Friday, the two stakes I mentioned for Friday at Santa Anita, the start, the pick five, the Chili goes as the sixth, and then the Eddie D, which marks the return of Wildman Jack. He's getting back on the grass after that try in the Crosby, but there's a number of good candidates in here. Gimme the Loot shows up for Andy Mathis, Mr. Vargas for Samantha Siegel. Samantha's got a couple of nice chances, it looks like, on Friday. El Tigre Terrible And Peter Miller. Peter Miller also has an interesting gelding that slowly, steadily, that seems like a better horse now at four. A Macho Uno for the Robesons called Grit and Curiosity. A Macho Uno out of an exchange rate mare. And it took a while to break his maiden. And then came back in February, ran a couple times at Oaklawn, ran very well. And then was sidelined. Keep an eye on that. The Grit and Curiosity made steady progress as a three-year-old and came back as a four-year-old looking like, you know, he's really going to go somewhere. This is his graded stake debut. And probably is going to be a decent price in here, as a matter of fact. One of my favorites, Sparkyville. Sparkyville, who tried the Green Flash. It didn't run badly. Got beat three lengths. But nice way to start the Santa Anita autumn season that over the weekend will throw a... it's going to be throwing bullets at you. The Pharaoh, the Awesome Again, the Chandelier, the John Henry Turf, the Rodeo Drive, plus the Speakeasy and the Unzip Me. So, very heavy on the action. And we already mentioned yesterday, if you just were listening to the replay, you heard Dave Grenig, Little Vosburgh, and Noble Damsel. Noble Damsel going a mile on the grass for the fillies and mares. Churchill's going to have the ACAC. Ed DeRosa is going to join us. I think we might have hit on something last week with Ed. Midweek visit. And so we'll do a little recapping with Ed, and we're going to look at the Wednesday-Thursday Churchill action, get some opinions. Delaware's got their owner's card on Saturday. Things like the Small Wonder and that the First State and the Governor's Handicap and all that. The Rosenberger, always a good card. Gulfstream's got a big card on Saturday as well. Florida Sire Series, the My Dear Girl and the In Reality. We'll draw that today. And Remington's in the action, too, this weekend, because on Sunday, you're looking at the Oaks and the Derby and the Remington Green and the two-year-olds swing into action, too. The Kip DeVille, etc. There is a lot going on. Canadian Derby, too, up at Century. And they'll put on a nice show. So it is a mammoth weekend. But midweek action is considerable. And you've got plenty to choose from. Today, Indiana, I was just checking the results from yesterday, which was very chalky when I looked last night. But today's pick five, if you're looking for a pick five sequence, and of course the 11.99% takeout, starting at 4:12 Eastern, 7x8, x7, x10, x10, and nice sequence. Indiana Bred Allowance, Open Company Fillies and Mares, first level, going three quarters on the dirt. Indiana Bred Maiden Special, going long on the dirt for the boys. Then Open Company, second level allowance, a mile on the grass, and a first level allowance, mile on the grass as well, to close it out. This is a really nice card, and I did not necessarily expect to handicap this, but next thing I knew, I was printing PPs. and Thoragraph. So that caught my eye, and you can watch the America's Day at the Races today on Fox. They'll bring you Churchill and Delaware. Looks like there's a good maiden special at Delaware that caught my eye, and at Churchill, and that's one of the reasons I was motivated to reach out to Ed. The 7-furlong, 2-year-old filly, 6th today, starts to pick 4. There's a third level allowance on the turf. Brad Cox has got set piece that is the one to catch and therefore the one to beat, but there's plenty of candidates. Short price, 8-5, but there's some nice horses in there. That's a good group in the 8th. So we'll get some opinions from Ed. And then tomorrow at Churchill, they come back with a very good, another really good card. I mean, this is just, and I haven't even talked about, you know, the Belmont Thursday and Friday that Andy alluded to that are both terrific. So Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, leading into a mammoth weekend. And we're going to have three big weekends in a row, essentially. And then a little, you know, then that little October pause, sadly, most sadly, unable to include in that October pause the trip to Far Hills, which really, really very frustrating. And I'm sure Guy Torsiglieri and everybody at Far Hills, you know, very frustrated to not be able to offer. And this, you know, so next year it'll be the 100th meeting for Far Hills. So that part, at least in terms of a celebration, ideally. I mean, I can't imagine if a year from now we're dealing with the same scenario. But, you know, on that topic, a couple of things. I saw where the UK, British Horse Racing Authority, talking about 6 more months there spectator free. So, you know, everybody dealing. On that topic, and Sid will join us at 10 o'clock when we talk sales, and there's some fun sale news from yesterday that actually was very much tied to some things that Mark Cassie had to say. The fact that the sales are happening and the racing is you know continuing essentially you know unencumbered or partially encumbered, I guess, but you know the fact that everything continues to go forward is pretty miraculous, considering you know where so many other entities are you know much more hamstrung. Anxious to hear what Sid's got to say. And I got a couple of other, you know, the sale obviously still continuing, 3 more sessions today, tomorrow, and Friday. But I do have a couple of requests out for some opinions and some of the people that we really like to hear from and, you know, whose opinions will be, you know, quite unvarnished. How about that? There's a good way to put it, right? So, I you know, particularly the small and medium breeder, the big commercial outfits that you know that have access to the stallions that command the most attention in the ring, you know, they're unaffected. I mean, much like I referenced yesterday before we talked to Nicole Russo. And I tell you, I happen to have heard part of Nicole's visit again this morning. And she is so good. So good. I mean, and all of the pedigree and sales visits that we've got, you know, whether it's the TDN team, all great, but it's funny because over the years, you know, for the longest time until Glennie Kane Oakford left the you know, the turf riding arena, Glennie was our only correspondent when it came to the sales, and of course she had she had the magic Rolodex. I mean, she had the giant Rolodex. I mean, knew everybody and had been doing it, you know, for an extended period. Ever since Glennie left and moved on to other, you know, other projects, the Mistress of the Hounds, Glennie Kane Oakford, you know, we've reached out to, you know, various correspondents for the trades and it's a, you know, it's interesting. It's a very young array when you I'm thinking about this. It just occurs. I mean, it's mostly, yeah, mostly young, you know, fairly young, I would say under 40, right? That are handling the sales, you know, Brian DiDonardo and Steve Chirac and Christy DiBernardis, Jessica Martini, Nicole Russo. I guess the Blood Horse team would be called the veteran sale correspondents, right? Ron Mitchell and they're a little bit more on the senior side. I'm not going to call them grizzled veterans. We're going to talk, in addition to visits with Ed, and of course it's Wednesday, so we'll talk later with Seth Merrow. We've got Ed, Sid, Seth, Tom Albertrani. I promised Tom Albertrani. We will talk to Tom and catch up on this fire and what he's got in mind for him. And then a few other things, because Tom had a good Saratoga, and looks like he's got a few starting to bring out. Typically with his client base, he's got lots of siblings. I think there's a certain point where I think he's got three. Does he have three of the sons and daughters of what's her name? Is it Dinair? Is the what's the Sadler's Joyce dam? I think he's got three. I think three siblings in the barn. So there's the top line. John Velasquez, who we've been looking forward to talking to. Johnny has got an appointment and a conference call. So I thought we had Johnny lined up, and he's going to put it off for a day. All right. And been wanting to get to Johnny anyway, post Derby, and we never connected. But one of the reasons I wanted to talk to Johnny, in addition to Authentic, the gathering momentum involving the whip rules between New Jersey and California, now New York saying they're going to take it up in their meeting. So it feels like a domino effect scenario. There were some annoyed riders. I want to get Johnny's, you know, as the head of the guild, John Velasquez, you know, the ideal spokesperson for this. But you want to see a bunch of quotes. Bill Finley talked to the group at Monmouth in the jocks room, and they said a variety of things. Many things, you know, very fair and you know, that makes sense about the difficulties that this essentially taking the whip out of their hands while keeping it in their hands. Some of the problems that are going to arise, you know, in terms of competitiveness and the need for the occasional reminder to keep a horse at its task, or you know, to urge it on, and they're actually, I should put the link up to this, because there's a couple of riders that said some very smart things. Hector Diaz, I thought was particularly smart about, you know, what people need to know with the whip situation. And he said that the whip's already changed. He said it's not even a tool anymore that inflicts any damage. And if it's just a question of, you know, people seeing horses urged, you know, with an implement, he says people, you know, should understand that it's not abuse. You know, the safety whip and the 360 whip of Ramon Dominguez, you know, which is like a Nerf. It's literally like a Nerf stick. It's got a foam core. It's a foam stick. All it's doing is you know, much like when you see horses urged into the gate with the toss, they only sometimes just need something to touch them. It's like when the rider taps them on the shoulder to change leads. It's not inflicting harm. I guess we can't explain that. I guess it's an era where any attempt to actually, you know, educate and explain anything doesn't fly anymore. I don't know. But I thought Diaz was really good. With the whips we're using right now, I don't feel like we're hurting the horse. It makes more noise than anything else. And that's that popper, too, the little popper on the end. It makes more noise than anything else. It's soft. Nobody should abuse the horse, and nobody should hit them 5-6 times in a row. I can only talk about myself, but when you see me riding, I never hit my horse more than 2 or 3 times. I hit them once or twice, let them respond. I thought Diaz was very good the way he responded to this. And, you know, the California is moving up the schedule as well, and I've seen owners and players that are just, you know, very frustrated with the way this has gone down. I should mention Farron Peterson. She said that she's got no problem with it. She was the one dissenting voice in the jocks room at Monmouth. And she said, I have no problem with the new rule. I think it will reward good horsemanship, and riders may have to rely upon different skills. And you heard it from Tony last week when this thing was being announced and implemented. Starts next year. There was also somebody else had the other quote was, talked about, you know, utilizing the rule that started in Europe, which was the gradual, you know, the no more than 3 swats, then wait for a response, and a set number of times you can hit the horse over the course of a race. And this also, and Johnny brought this up, you may have seen John Velasquez's quote where he says that, you know, when he's had the opportunity to try to explain, the people that are making these decisions, they're not, you know, they're if they're listening, it's not evident that they're taking, you know, serious input into the decision. And one of the things that annoyed the riders in New Jersey was that they weren't included at all in the discussion. And this is, you know, this is problematic from a lot of standpoints. And it frankly heralds and you know, comes in advance of the things we talked about last week with Matt Hegarty regarding the legislation that appears set to go through, and putting a bunch of people on a on oversight type committees, or you know, the steering operations that really don't know the inner workings at all, and having them make arbitrary decisions that have, you know, potentially unforeseen results down the road. And that's what this is. This is, you know, people making a decision that affects, you know, the lives, not just livelihoods, but, you know, this thing has got tangents in every direction. So I can understand, I can understand the visuals, and there's you know, loud and steady drumbeat from very reasonable people within the industry that have been saying for years. I mean, we've talked about this. You know, Trevor Denman and Jay Hovde have advocated for, you know, a change to this for years, and I mean, those are certainly people that understand the ramifications, but the way this is being executed just seems is something of a pandering response, as if, you know, as if riders having, you know, the use of the crop taken away from them is suddenly going to placate and change the views of you know, of people that, you know, that already hate the sport and want to see it ended. I mean, I don't know. You know, we're right back to the whole, you know, seat at the table discussion with people that want to see your, you know, your livelihood end. So anyway, that was one thing to touch on this morning. And another element that I wanted to refer back to from yesterday with Mark Cassie, he brought up that Spanish love affair, and no sooner did the Spanish love affair come up that Caracanti ended up having a really huge day. And you heard Nicole yesterday while we were on the air that colt, HIP 2814, fetched $500,000. And Marcia Nafee, who's had, you know, a long successful period as an owner, and she partners up a lot too. She's the Headleys. She's always had horses with the Headley family, and you think of Street Boss was Marcia Nafee, and she had a sprinter, I remember, Free Flying Soul, who was okay. Was a nice stake horse. This is a big price for Marcia Nafee, $500,000, and she was not in attendance. Just looking at the recap, but she was impressed enough. Brian Graves of Gainesway talked about the colt, and you know, not only did this Caracanti fetch $500,000, there was also the sister to Spanish Love Affair. 220,000 for that one. So Gary Conti with a big book five score. And the Phillies out of the unusual heat mare, Spanish Bunny, who's also got that Spanish Queen and now Spanish Love Affair. And this one, the colt, is closely related to Mr. Big News, who you're going to see, of course, in the Preakness. Second Dam, Unappeased, Galileo mare that got Mr. Big News. And this is the first foal out of Untouch, Spitestown filly. She only made one start, but her first, that's a first, that's a home run with her first foal, 500,000. And, you know what, we'll have to check and see who she was bred back to. So, a solid day overall, too, of trade yesterday, almost 6.5 million, 253 sold. And 55 RNAs, average of 25,000. Median of 15. So three more sessions of the marathon. We'll get some more impressions from Sid. And we'll head to the break. Tom Albertrani is going to join us in just a couple of minutes. But I wanted to also pass along a sad note, and saw yesterday where news had circulated of Tony Shamblin's passing at 81, died on Sunday. And, you know, for those that hear the name Shamblin, yes, Keith Shamblin's father, who had a long, distinguished career in the game. And, sent along our condolences and wishes to the Shamblin family. The career that Tony Shamblin had touched on everything. I mean, he did some racetrack management and actually stepped in at Finger Lakes at a key juncture. He was involved in the formative years of HBPA. He was the chief executive there for 20 years, the 60s into the 80s. RCI, Racing Commissioners International, was instrumental and had a driving role in the Interstate Horse Racing Acts creation, which is, you know, the foundation of virtually everything that goes on in the paramutual structure of the sport. The IHA, about as, you know, fundamental to the business as there is. And Tony Shamblin, key to that. And one thing I did not know, having read the obit, and when Keith's up to it, I'm sure he'll, you know, flesh out and elaborate on his relationship. I mean, he in the note to me, he said he's my best friend and a tremendous mentor and father, and of course there's. Leaves wife Debbie, and Keith's got two sisters too, Margaret and Caitlin, and six grandchildren. Donations to old friends for those that are hearing about Tony Shamblin's passing for the first time. But one of the most interesting tidbits about his life. He left college, Millikan in Decatur, and became the youngest sports editor in the country of a newspaper with a circulation over 100,000. The Courier Press at Evansville, which, of course, you know, covers racing, you know, very closely. And won several awards as a sports writer. Wrote for SI, wrote for Newsweek. Very cool. So I'm anxious. I knew Keith's father, you know, had a distinguished career in the game, but that part was juicy. That was a great tidbit. My business partner Barry Fry wrote for the Courier Press. Went to Evansville and Lehigh. Great basketball player. And then later for the Allentown, the Allentown Morning. My brother worked for that paper too in Allentown. Oh my gosh, I've drawn a blank. The Morning. It's got a cool name, actually. Let's take a break. Tom Albertrani is going to join us in a minute or two, and we'll catch up with Tom. Back after this at the races.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
From BRL Equine, the people that bring you EPO Equine, Unlock, and Bleeder Shield, now comes Flexify HA, the most advanced scientifically based joint supplement on the market. To find out more, contact me, Joseph Vellante, at 215-501-6880. To be the best, give them only the best. BRL Equine.
Our Pennsylvania breeding program was, of course, impacted by the pandemic. Now, with our country getting back to work, we'd like to again talk about our program, the best in North America. Our breeder awards will remain up to 50% for PA-sired PA breds. Owner bonuses will also stay at up to 40%. Restricted races will again be run at all three PA tracks, and PA Day at the races will return. I'm Brian Sanfratello. For more, please visit PABred.com.
If you are racing two-year-olds in California, Kentucky, please consider Bleeder Shield. The leading all-natural paste used to greatly reduce or eliminate EIPH. The list of trainers who trust Bleeder Shield is endless. Shouldn't you join the team? To learn more, contact Joseph Vellante at 215-501-6880.
Back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Don't wait for promises, man. They can't be measured up enough. You weigh your heart too heavy. That's why you fumble when you walk. Yeah. If you want me to disappear.
We're back at the races. Tom Albertrani is going to join us momentarily, and as soon as the break hit, the morning call. The morning call is what I was trying to come up with in Allentown. Yes, the Allentown morning call. A couple of things that I've been just noticing actually on Twitter, and I wanted to remind everybody, the Naira Bets contests, rather than Sundays like we did at Saratoga, they're going to be Saturdays instead, and all through the Belmont Fall. And you have to register just like for the Sunday contests at Saratoga. You register the day before by 5 o'clock. So by Friday, 5 o'clock, and I'll remind you again on Fridays, by 5 p.m., the registration closes for the next day. It's just a $250 buy-in, and with the racing that we're going to get, obviously, you know, on Saturdays at Belmont, the rest of the meet before things shift over to Aqueduct, should be terrific. And 125 goes to the prize pool, 125 live bankroll, and should be really fun. I think there's also going to be a nice qualifier also in the fall. I got to see what if they're going to do that at Aqueduct. But anyway, Saturday contests instead of Sunday like we did at Saratoga. And they were very popular this summer at Saratoga, $250. And what the heck, you're going to be handicapping the races anyway. And joined now, though, by Tom Albertrani to dive into what has been a really good late summer and already early fall. Two wins on Saturday at Belmont, including the jaw dropper from Faya. Tom, good morning.
Morning, Steve.
How quickly did you realize what had come your way?
Well, you know, that was really impressive. Going into the race, you know, we felt really, really good about the horse. I probably gotten him maybe 6 weeks prior to that day, and on looks, he just looks the part. He looked like a really special horse when I first came to the barn, and after a couple of works, he just really showed that this horse could be a very serious horse. And I wouldn't have said he was going to run 106 and change that day, but I felt pretty confident going into the race beforehand.
Well, and this was a nice group, and there obviously, you know, there was plenty to go on. You know, the horse over the summer for the Merrymans had done, you know, quite nicely, and you know, particularly those two races at Laurel as a 3-year-old that obviously got Bob Masiello's attention. And you know, talk about you know, the arrangement and Masiello, you know, reaching out to you with this one.
Well, me and Rob, we've been together for a number of years, from going back to when he was doing partnerships with West Point, and we became really good friends, and actually, you know, partnered up on a couple of horses breeding. And he just, you know, kept on telling me, I want to get you a good horse. And, you know, he's been trying. He's been really loyal. And, you know, he just kept trying to find a nice horse to put in the barn. And, you know, we've had some, you know, unluck with a few of them. But this one certainly looks like he's going to step up and be a real serious horse for him.
He's a Frisian Fire out of a two-punch mare. And Ann Merriman had bred Faya, and Michael Merriman was training. How quickly, you know, do you assess this, you know, where you are with him and what the, you know, what the plan of action is?
Well, right now it's a tough time of the year. I mean, 2 weeks' time is coming back too quick for the Turf Invitational, you know, even if he was to even get in the race. And there's nothing really, without shipping, maybe there's a possibility at Woodbine in 30 days, or you might have to sit back and wait for a race the end of November at Aqueduct. So it's kind of a, you know, trying to figure that out, you know, is what we've been thinking about the last day or so. If Breeders' Cup was a consideration in getting in, I think Rob would be all for it as well. But you know, right now, we're just going to, you know, kind of go like just kind of day to day and see how he comes out of the race. Looks like he came out fine, and come up with some sort of a plan.
Give us a little bit about, you know, what you've been able to glean from him about the kind of horse he is to be around, and also I'm curious what you told Kieran and Luis Saez about what kind of a game plan to attack the race with.
Well, you know, when he first came to the barn, you know, he was a little on edge. He was a little nervous coming around, and you know, it took him just a couple of days to get settled right in at Saratoga. You know, just watching him train and everything, he got my attention right away. I mean, just, you know, watching the way he was breezing. I think the first time I breezed him, he worked in 47 and change. It looked like he wasn't getting himself out of a gallop. And the funny part, you know, it's a long-term joke in the barn, because, you know, you never usually see my horses work, you know, less than 48,
sure,
or mostly 50, 51, something like that. So Rob said, I dare you to let this horse work slower than 49.
He knew what was coming.
It was just kind of funny. And, you know, he just got my attention right away. And you know, we reached out. Karen was always happy to ride the horse. He was watching the horse. And I told Louis, just come out and do your own thing. I said, if the horse in Saudi has a little more speed, that's fine. But, you know, don't take whatever comes easy. Don't take anything away. And he just came out running, and that was it.
It really was. And by the time he put this away, and when those, you know, when those fractions, I got to ask, I mean, when the fractions went up, it's one thing to open a quarter and 21-1, but then 43-1, 54-3. I mean, what did you?
Well, I was just looking at Louis. Louis looked like a statue on him. I'm just, you know, I was standing next to Rob, and at the quarter pole, I said to him, I said, I think he's going to win this pretty easy. He just threw away every shot. He just had something left, and it's amazing. You know, we went back to the barn later. I watched him cool out, and he wouldn't blow out a candle. I mean, it was amazing. So hopefully there's going to be some big things in the future for this horse.
Fire. F-I-Y-A, if you haven't seen him, the Frisian Fire Gelding in the eighth race on Sunday, you know, 99 buyer, and obviously a fun property going forward, no matter where, you know, no matter where he's going to head. And, you know, Andy Serling and I yesterday we talked about him, and, you know, you've had, in addition to, you know, the long distance, we'll talk about Sadler's Joy in a minute and his siblings, but you've had a run of nice turf sprinters the last couple of years.
Yeah, we have. We've been pretty fortunate to have some good turf horses, long or short. And I just want to make one comment. You know, my horse that was second in the race, he ran a hell of a race too, but I kind of felt bad, because I told the owners, I said, you know, I feel bad. I got to run this horse. I got a horse that's really good in here, and I hate to run them together. And they said, well, you know, if we run second, we'll be happy. it turned out all good.
Well, and that you should flesh it out, because Duress, who's a violence colt, and you were returning him to, you know, to a sprint distance, and it feels like you made up your mind that. Going to keep him short?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we go into Saratoga, we couldn't, you know, it's either you're going, you know, 5.5 or a mile. There's nothing in between. So we felt 7/8 would probably be his real best distance. So we tried him in the mile race. That was the only race that I think went for the whole meet for that horse. And he actually didn't run too bad in that race. We lost a lot of ground, and he was only beaten a couple of lengths maybe for the whole thing. But he, you know, definitely, I think he's probably a good 7/8 type of horse, you know, 3/4, wherever you find those type of races. And, yeah, I was really pleased with his performance as well.
Well, and he's gonna clear, it looks like. I mean, he'll clear the allowance condition, and he's a nice claim. He was 40,000, and then broke his maiden for 40, and then wins a starter allowance. I mean, he was a nice return on investment for Chalk Racing right away.
Yeah, he's been really good for us. You know, he runs, I don't think he's run a bad one since we've claimed him. And, I think he's got also a nice future, knock out some nice allowance races. And, maybe he could even step his game up a little bit, too.
And I think he's a four-year-old. He's a four-year-old. So, that's another aspect of this that you really weren't giving, you weren't getting that much weight as a three-year-old facing elders in here with Faya.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, he carried 120, and Duress 121, the rest of the field 123. And, Tom, I in addition to this development, you had a terrific Saratoga, and you finished with a flourish. That included the two-time winner Scano, and, there's some others to talk about. And then, of course, there's the unpleasantry. You need to join the Joe Orsino Grant Forster run back of horses that were disqualified this summer that deserved to get a stake win back with Sam.
Yeah, that was disappointing. I mean, he really ran a really good race that day. You know, it's so tough for him. You know, he's been close in every race, and he finally gets himself into the winner's circle, and you're watching his number coming down. It was kind of an unfortunate situation, but I think as a trainer, I think I've been disqualified more times at Saratoga than anyone else. I think it just seems like just so it seems to happen quite a bit.
Who else? What other notable sticks? And because off the top of my head, I can't think of one that was, this was kind of glaring and particularly frustrating in light of some other incidents that didn't result in takedowns. I mean, and that's
Yeah, well, there's been several other ones. I can't remember all of them, but I do remember there were several winners that coming down in the past. But that's then. This is now. But anyway, Sadler Joy. He really put up a good performance that day, and he always shows up. But it was that's the difference of having a really good meet. You know, just losing that one big race like that.
Well, and what's I suppose the Joe Hirsch for him?
Yeah, it's on the table. We'll take a look at it. He's been training really well. 7 years old, and you would never tell me he was 7 years old watching him bounce around the barn, but he's been training really well. I think he threw out his last race on the soft ground. That was kind of a bad day with the rain never ending that day, and you kind of know in the back of your mind, you kind of know better, running or not running over a deep, soggy turf. But the rain came right on top of the race, and by that time, it's like do if you do or do if you don't. It's you just hope that I was hoping that he would put in the same effort he did at Churchill Downs when it was a bog that day. He did manage to run a good third that day, but he really rather have some firm ground to his liking. So it was just a bad day of weather that day.
He's a personal favorite of mine, and of course the whole family, the Dynair sons and daughters that continue to do nice things. Dinah Passer.
Dinah Passer was retired recently. She had a minor injury, unfortunately, but hopefully she'll turn out to be a good broodmare. We got his half brother in the barn, as you know, Wolfie's Dinah. Dinah Gosey's coming along quite nicely. We'll probably be looking at a race with him probably late in the fall, maybe before we make a move down south. But he's been coming along, showing some promise. So we got something to look forward to.
Oh, that's all right. I was going to kind of go through the whole litany of Dynair's family, and that's too bad. But she's a lemon drop kid, and you would think that she, she'll have a future as a brood mare. Do you know have you heard them talking about a match for her?
No, and not at the moment. I haven't heard of any matching for her just yet. No.
All right. Well, and then you mentioned Wolfie's Dyna-Ghost. Not only is there this ghost zapper colt, the two-year-old, but she had this year, she's got a weanling by Ghost Zapper. So there's a full brother down the road in 2 years.
And there's also a full sister to Sadler's Joy that's a yearling right now, just about being broke.
Oh, how about that? There it is. Hail 2 is her
Kitten's
name.
Joy.
Yeah.
I don't know the name, but it's a Kitten's Joy, and it's a full sister.
They've named her Hail 2.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know that.
Yeah, there you go. So it won't be long. It'll be early next summer. We can look forward to Hail 2. Go ahead, put that in your watch list. And,
right.
And then of course, what about we have to give a tip of the cap to Lunaire, who's made his way over the jumps.
Yeah, I think he's been doing pretty well. I've been able to watch him run a couple of times, and it seems like he seems to be enjoying his new career.
Very much. He's a Malibu Moon, and also a horse that made over 100,000. Actually made a quarter of a million, and won three times. I mean, she's been terrific. And even her least accomplished get, which was a colt. Her first was Peter House. Did you have that horse?
No, I don't think I did.
No, that doesn't ring a bell at all. I'm going to have to look up Peter, but actually was a three-time winner. So every foal that Dynabuck, what happened to Dynabuck?
Dynabuck, I can't recall what I think he was probably might have been a small injury of some sort, but yeah, I don't remember what happened with that horse.
He's not that. You know, not that there's a redheaded stepchild in this group, but he's the only one that hasn't tallied. I got to ask you about Scano, and Scano emerged over the summer as a two-time winner at Saratoga, Tom, and kind of a nice story, and then kind of interesting to see the sibling come over and win the Belmont Oaks.
Yeah, he's always been a horse that I always thought had a lot of potential. I think we maybe didn't see even the best of him yet. I really wanted to try to stretch him out like over a mile and a quarter. I think he would really benefit from going longer. So he really enjoyed Saratoga. He trained well, and hopefully we could keep him going on the right track.
The dam, we saw that. That the Sarah Lynx came up this week now I've got to think about who it was that we discussed Sleek Lynx with. The Warfront 2-year-old filly, Cassie, I think. Cassie yesterday. Cassie's got the sibling.
Okay, I didn't know that.
Yeah, he's the Warfront filly, and we came up yesterday. That's why the name, jumped up at me. Not only was Scano a success, I mean, just one of the ones from Saratoga. You had a steady parade, Tom, of good performances and wins. There was also that Malibu Curl.
Yes, she's also owned by Woods Lane Farms. Lauren and Renee Wolcott own her as well. She's a very promising filly. She won very impressively her second start at Saratoga, very easily actually. And there's another one that has a bright future, hopefully. And we'll just kind of play by ear and see where we run her back again.
Well, I was going to say, how aggressive do you want to get with a 2-year-old like this?
We don't want to get real aggressive with her. I mean, she's certainly a horse for the future. She's definitely going to be a two-turned horse, and I think we'll just let her come along, one step at a time, and just see how she progresses from there.
Well, anytime 2-year-olds break their maiden at 7/8, that's always a sign of quality.
Yeah, and she certainly showed it before then. You know, we really liked her going into the race, and, you know, before she ran, we really had high hopes on her. So she actually came through, and she really showed she's got some talent, I believe.
Well, and she had much more Albertrani-like workout pattern with
yeah.
50 flats and 49 and twos.
That's the day she got away.
Exactly, and she was a good. I think she was like 6-1, give or take, in that maiden win. But kind of projected, and even, you know, that's one of the interesting things about clocker reports, because it doesn't. It's not all about getting a bullet. If a horse is working nicely and, you know, and getting those kinds of, you know, half miles easily, plus, you know, galloping out and building stamina, there, you know, that's why the comments mean more than just, you know, best of 35 or whatever it might be.
Exactly. So that's the way I like to bring them along. I know the first time out, we're not gearing up to win first time out. Just hopefully they put up a nice performance and get something out of the race. And always, you know, like to see them come back their second start. If they got the talent like she has, they come back and they look good doing it.
She's a Curlin out of the Malibu Moon Mare Prospector's Moon that was a winner. Ollie Figgins had Prospector's Moon for Woods Lane, and actually it was bred originally by Green Lantern, and she herself was, you know, kind of cut out to be a nice filly, and there I can see Tom why, you know, you're looking down the road for two turns. This family, you know, Prospector's Moon by Malibu Moon, Prospector's Moon Dam was by Seeking the Gold. I mean, there's plenty. This is a filly to watch, obviously. I think there's obviously something here, Malibu Curl, to look forward to.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think we got something to look forward to in the future with her.
Who else? I'm trying to think of who else was a winner at the meet. Was there anybody from earlier that I'm forgetting?
Earlier we had a New York bred winner, Whistling in the Dark.
Okay.
And then we had a good third and fourth finish in the Glen, what was it, the Glens Falls race with Bo Bell and Lovely Lucky ran a terrific race. So third and fourth, I thought both fillies could have benefited from a little stronger pace, but they both actually ran well. And, you know, Bo Bell is actually a half-sister to Sadler's Joy's mother. I don't know if you knew that or
funny.
Not.
Funny. I didn't. That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah, but they both ran well, and I think then we ran a two-year-old at Monmouth. He won first time out for 40 claiming, Bodie Meister Colt, and yeah, I think we've won like our last 5 out of 6 starts, so had a good fall, had a good end of summer fall start.
You know, I could see it, and you know, you mentioned Lovely Lucky. She won, I think, opening weekend at Saratoga.
That's right, she did too. She was very impressive. She took a big step up in the Glens Falls, and she actually ran well. She was, you know, she was a little bit restrained, a little bit too much for her own good. Probably the first half mile in 53 probably didn't help her. But I think she's a filly that certainly has a lot of potential in these longer races. I thought she was quite impressive in winning at Saratoga in the non-winners of two race. So I think also that's another horse we'll be watching very closely.
Tell me about Elizabeth Mateo.
She's from Georgia, her and her husband. They've only, I think, actually owned a couple of horses, and she bought this filly, I think, for $5,000 at the Keeneland sales a few years back, and I think it was a good buy so far. She looks like she's going to definitely be a stakes winner somewhere down the road, but just very nice people. They contacted me about a year ago or so, and just have a couple of horses in the barn for them.
How about that? And I see that that they paid $5,000, and this was unbelievable. What a purchase this is! And actually, a sibling to Assembly Hall to a stake winner and somehow slipped through the cracks. Dinah Fair, a Dinah former mayor, and wow. So this is another horse that should only be getting better as she matures. Look by looking at Lucky,
I would think so. Yeah, we're pretty excited to to see how she does next time. We'll probably run her and Bell Bell in the Flower Bowl next time.
Outstanding! I love lovely Lucky, and she may have slipped under the cracks. And boy. You got to be. You do have to be lucky, Tom. Right? Every now and then.
Yeah, it's true. You need a lot of that for sure.
You don't have anything these first couple of days back, Thursday, Friday. But what are you running over the weekend?
I think we got a pretty quiet weekend, actually.
Okay.
So I don't think we'll really get back into action until the following weekend when. Hopefully we'll see Sadler's Joy running in the Joe Hirsch.
Well, we'll look forward to it. And as mentioned, the Flower Bowl, too, with Lovely Lucky and Bo Bell and Faya. Right away, first start for Rob Masiello after the private purchase. And Tom, well done and continued success. Look forward to seeing you as early as Belmont Championship here a couple of weekends.
All right, Steve. Appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Always fun. Tom Albert. Oh, Tom, are you still there?
Yeah.
Congratulations on Teal's engagement.
Okay, thank you very much.
You guys got to be excited.
We really are. Yeah.
Well, and this is the motivation for all these winners. You got to build the war chest for the big wedding.
That's true, yeah. We'll be working on that, yep.
I love it. Tom Albertrani, everybody, who's just so well-liked and appreciated. And I had told you, a few weeks ago at Saratoga about Teal getting engaged. And you can follow Tom, T-A Racing LLC is Tom's Twitter. And a lot of good things happening in that barn. If you didn't, I hope you wrote them down. And I got no less than three, maybe even four requests for a index of those Cassie horses from yesterday. So I will, I'll pull that together. All right, let's take a break and we'll come back. Sid Fernando joins us next.
Racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
If you are racing two-year-olds in California, Kentucky, please consider Bleeder Shield. The leading all-natural paste used to greatly reduce or eliminate EIPH. The list of trainers who trust Bleeder Shield is endless. Shouldn't you join the team? To learn more, contact Joseph Vellante at 215-501-6880.
Our Pennsylvania breeding program was, of course, impacted by the pandemic. Now, with our country getting back to work, we'd like to again talk about our program, the best in North America. Our breeder awards will remain up to 50% for PA-sired PA breds. Owner bonuses will also stay at up to 40%. Restricted races will again be run at all three PA tracks, and PA Day at the Races will return. I'm Brian Sanfratello. For more, please visit PABred.com.
From BRL Equine, the people that bring you EPO Equine, Unlock, and Bleeder Shield, now comes Flexify HA, the most advanced, scientifically-based joint supplement on the market. To find out more, contact me, Joseph Vellante, at 215-501-6880. To be the best, give them only the best. BRL Equine.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
I want to be rich and I want lots of money. I don't care about clever, I don't care about funny. I want
want loads of clothes and fuck loads of diamonds. I heard people die while they're trying to find them. And I'll take my clothes off and it will be shameless, 'cause everyone knows that's how you get famous. I'll look at the sun and I'll look in the mirror. I'm on the right track, yeah, I'm on to a winner.
We're back at the races, 10 minutes into hour two, and thanks to Tom Alvetrani for a fun visit where we covered a lot of ground.